What's up? Another episode of Real Perfect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Vernes, also known as Ricky Vernes, and a great episode for you today. Somebody that I've been a fan of for a long time, Derek Brose from the Conscious Resistance YouTube channel and website and network. He's an author, co-host of Freethinker Radio, journalist, public speaker, activist, and just a really interesting guy and researcher, and has great perspectives on things. He has a great journey and story that he shares with us today. He has some documentaries that I highly recommend you guys checking out. You can find them all on his YouTube channel, or if you go to my YouTube channel, RV Theory 6, or just search the Ripple Effect Podcast, you'll find it. I have a playlist with documentaries. Most of his documentaries, if not all of them, are on that playlist or in that playlist. Or you can go to his YouTube channel and you can find the documentaries. One that I highly recommend is the 5G Trojan Horse. It's a documentary that we talk about later in our conversation today. And he also has a great one on the Finders Cult called Who Will Find What the Finders Hide, and a Jeffrey Epstein documentary called Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein from 2018. Great documentaries, always well researched, and I can't thank him enough for taking the time to talk to me today and also expose some of his work to my listeners who maybe aren't familiar with it. The Conscious Resistance is the YouTube channel. It's also the website, like I always tell you guys in the show description. I'll put links to all his stuff and all my stuff, so you'll be able to find my Patreon page. You'll be able to find my music if you want to support the show by purchasing the music. And you'll also find links to all my guests' work. And anybody who calls in using video, like Derek did today, you can actually see us have the conversation on our YouTube channel. So please subscribe, like, all that stuff. Rate the show, review the show, share the show. As I always tell you, that's super important. You never know who's going to click on it and hopefully get exposed to some new ideas and perspectives. So I think that's it. Let's keep this intro short. Let's keep this intro sweet. Hopefully everybody's staying sane, staying safe, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace. Thanks so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on and reaching out to me. I was checking out some of the other interviews and stuff you've done.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been doing it probably as long as you have, but I've been doing it for a little bit. I think we've interviewed some of the same people, and we kind of hang out in the same circles and a lot of the same circles. But I've been a huge fan of your work for a long time, so I'm glad I finally got in touch with you. You were one of the first people that really, you know, I was seeing you talk about Epstein a long time ago before, obviously, a lot of other people started making it their focus, and a lot of other topics that other people haven't done, I would say, quite of good as a job talking about. I mean, recently your 5G documentary, which I want to discuss a little bit because it's kind of one of those topics that a lot of people in the alternative media are discussing, but nobody's really going into detail on what exactly it is, or where are these, you know, is there any actual facts or research or information connecting it to coronavirus? I know you and James did a great interview not too long ago in regards to that, and I kind of wanted to kind of highlight that conversation a little bit and some of the things you discussed, because it is one of those things where, like, both topics are important, but they're not necessarily related or linked as of what we can see at this point. But I guess before we get into all that, can you just tell my listeners who might not be familiar with your website, your podcast, your show, could you give them just a brief background on how you got into investigating journalists and researching and all that stuff?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, my journey has been, I guess, a multi-chaptered one. We'll keep it real short and simple. I got arrested in 2005 when I was 20 years old. I was addicted to crystal meth. I went to prison, and that was kind of what started my life change well before I ever got into politics and activism and journalism. But it kind of started me on a new path of questioning everything around me, questioning my own life, questioning my own traumas, and working through all that. And then when I got out, it was a felon, and I got to experience life as a felon in the United States. And so that started coloring some of my experiences and getting me to question the drug war and question the justice system, and just reading, learning, remembering that I kind of lost myself in drugs and forgot that I like to learn and read just know about the world. And the more I chose to do that, the less I understood. You know, the more I was like, what the hell is going on? None of this makes any sense. But that was about, I got out for the final time 2008, got off parole 2009. started questioning the world by the end of 2009. And then by 2010, it started an activist community called the Houston Freethinkers. I didn't go to school for journalism, but after a couple of years of just blogging and kind of doing the more citizen journalism, just going out in the streets with the camera, I realized that I enjoyed it and I seemed to have a knack for it and that I love to write and I love to research. So about 2012, I started taking it more seriously and getting paid to do it. And since then, I've just been do it full time as often as I can, you know, writing articles, investigations, documentaries, books, essays, etc. And I founded the Conscious Resistance Network, as we call it, because it's my work, but it's also kind of a compilation of a number of people's contributions and their work towards what we call the Conscious Resistance, theconsciousresistance.com. It's the name of the YouTube channel, the network, and I guess you could say the kind of philosophy or movement behind my work, which is essentially that, you know, the struggle we're dealing with is one that takes place both in the physical realm, dealing with corrupt politicians and people like Epstein and, you know, real world situations, but also it very much involves our internal world, our internal tyrant, our own doubts, fears, and traumas, and how we can find the balance between those two worlds and really overcome both of them. And I think that's what I'm aiming for. You know, my journalism and my investigations, the hope is kind of that I can put some doubt in people's minds and get them to question these various systems. And then hopefully through that process, start seeking solutions. And I try to provide some of those solutions in my books and some of my other videos. And but I mean, I just love writing. I love researching. I love trying to learn more about the world. And I feel that my channel and my podcast and all my videos are really just me kind of letting people peek inside my brain of like, here's the crazy things I'm researching. Here's what I found, you know, let's all figure out what we can, and more than trying to be some sort of authoritative source about it. And I feel like that's a lot more helpful.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that I think when people are dealing with addiction, doing some soul searching and finding out what's causing you to be addicted to this substance, like what is it fulfilling that maybe something else in your life is missing? And I think writing also helps with some of that soul searching. I one thing I always loved about writing, you know, because I was a musician growing up and I still play and write some music. And it always seemed like it forced me to kind of reflect on my thoughts, my emotions, my feelings. It forced me to kind of like look in the mirror and be like, how do I really feel about this? And when you're writing by yourself, you're almost like you're not really worried so much about who's judging you or who's going to, you know, who. Because sometimes when you have a conversation with somebody, other people's opinions might react or might affect your reaction or how you feel on a certain position or issue. And when you're writing, it's almost like you're isolated and you're just kind of soul searching and looking into yourself. Do you feel like that was a big part of just getting your life back together, was like the writing really helped kind of figure out whatever issues you might have had?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even before getting into the type of writing I'm doing now, I mean, when I went to prison, I actually is where I discovered meditation. That's where I started meditating. And part of that meditation was journaling, you know, doing just daily journaling. And it's a practice that I've continued for the last, it'll be 15 years this November that I got arrested. It's something that besides journalistic writing and essays and books and things of that sort, just personal writing, journaling, it definitely helped me on a daily basis. And the interesting thing that I just am kind of, I guess, in awe of still 15 years later is I remember as I was, once I realized that I wasn't going home and there was nothing I could do, I could be on the phone all day, I could call my lawyer, cry to my girlfriend, my mom, whatever. It was like, this is a done deal. You're stuck here for at least a year, you know, and that was kind of that acceptance of that, I think, was not only very, it was very powerful in a number of ways, because you have to feel powerless, I think, and many of us at least have to hit that feeling of being powerless to really start, like you said, questioning things and looking for the solutions. In the same way, I think right now with COVID-19, a lot of the world is feeling powerless, so they're looking for solutions, and they're looking for a lot of the ideas that myself and others have been talking about for years. But, you know, basically it came down to, I knew I wasn't going anywhere. I can either stay in this place and stew. I can become a worse criminal if I want. I can, you know, be angry. I can be sad. I can be depressed. I can do nothing. Or I can try to figure out how the hell I got here. And that's basically what I chose to do, is to start doing a lot of that inner work. And as I said, I got into meditation. I started journaling every day. And it was just, I noticed over weeks of, for one, getting used to being in this very slowed down reality compared to being out here in the free world where things are just going fast. In there, you're just like, okay, they tell you when to eat, when to go to sleep. You know, there's not much to do. You're kind of in this little bubble. And in that space, I was just journaling every day. And I started to notice that my handwriting was getting more precise. My handwriting, I'm usually always in a hurry, just writing really fast, trying to get these thoughts out, you know. And at this time, it was like I could feel and see that, wow, my handwriting is getting more precise. I'm feeling more calm. I'm feeling more intuitive to my own thinking and to my own experiences. And I mean, I filled up notebooks while I was in prison. And I honestly think that's probably what saved me. And yeah, like, you know, it did also help me remember that I like to write. And then once I started questioning the world, it just was sort of natural to write about the things I was learning about.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's super fascinating. I think, you know, that's one of the things about when this whole coronavirus thing, and this is why I think this conversation is actually somewhat relevant, because I think you're seeing an increase with people, substance abuse, depression, anxiety. So how to deal with that is an important conversation. I think spirituality, some type of meditation, is so important. You know, I live in the East Coast. I live in Massachusetts, but my family's from Portugal. I was born in Portugal. And, you know, you go to Europe and everybody lives such slower paced lives. You know, like things are closed around noontime because everybody's having lunch and having a 2-hour break and taking their time and actually sharing thoughts with friends over a coffee or whatever. But here, especially in the East Coast, it's like go, 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 go. You never have a moment to reflect on, you know, what journey or what road have I chosen to go down? Is it the right road? Where do I stand on this? If you have a confrontation with like a loved one or a family member or whoever, you never have time to think about like, oh, could I handle that differently? Can I see from their perspective? Like all these things that are so important. And, you know, I guess one good thing that comes out of all this, like I've had friends of mine who are like, oh, you know, the one good thing is now I've been spending a lot of time with the family, which is, you know, a good thing. And I'm like, yeah, because before that, you were spending too much time at work. For me, my life hasn't changed that much because I've really tried to balance. I mean, besides work hasn't been as busy, but I really try to balance like my work life and my personal life. And I always try to spend as much time as possible with my friends and family. I always made sure that I was never too busy to you know, spend a few hours a day doing something fun, something productive with the kids, with the friends and family. So even though I'm doing a little more of that, it's not a huge drastic change. But some of my friends, it's like they would be at work all day, come home late, kids already sleeping, do the same thing again. It would only be the weekends that they would see their family and friends. So I think that's super important for people to kind of reevaluate, taking this opportunity to reevaluate like what really makes them happy. And, you know, getting that promotion, working all that hours, like, is that really going to be the road to happiness? And I think finding some sense of happiness or finding out what really does make you happy, especially when you're dealing with anxiety, depression, those type of things, is obviously super important, right, Derek?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, and you bring up some good points there. That I mean, there's been reports of increase in domestic violence during this point, or child abuse because of people being home. And I'm sure, like you mentioned, substance abuse as well. Because yeah, if you're already dealing with something, dealing with a lockdown of the whole world essentially is even more traumatic and can be difficult for some of us to deal with. And especially if you don't have any sort of support systems and you don't have anybody that you can even, you know, do a Skype or a Zoom call with, or, you know, anybody you can see on a regular basis. And to your point about people slowing down, I mean, in many ways, what's going on, despite all the craziness and much of which I've been covering with my journalism and my kind of less than optimistic view, I'll say, for the coming decade, I do see a lot of good happening out of this situation. As I mentioned, there are people who are looking to solutions like freedom cells, which I'm sure we'll touch on, and some of the concepts that I've been promoting for years, as well as others just, hey, I want to learn how to grow my own food now. I'm ready to figure out how to take care of myself. Or as you mentioned too, maybe I need to rethink how much time I've been spending at work and think about spending more of that time with my family and friends and the people I care about. So I think overall, humans as a species, we're the kind of creatures that we react. We don't necessarily think forward often, or at least, you know, not today. Our ancestors seem to. But it seems in many cases we're very reactive. So we have to wait for everything that we know and love to be threatened. Oh, no, I might die from a virus. Or no, the government's acting crazy, or whatever it may be, before people finally stop and say, what am I doing with my life? Like, okay, I know these things about what's going on in the world, but how much have I actually done to free myself from these things, or to take care of my family and friends and provide for the coming generations and establish a foundation, you know, other than, like you said, working that 9-to-5 50 plus hours a week for some people, and then, you know, not seeing family. And I think that's something that hopefully people are starting to rethink as we do go forward, rethinking so that when we do go back to normal, or the new normal as they're calling it, that it's not just the same old thing, that maybe there are some big changes that we can make after experiencing what we're experiencing right now.
Yeah, I hate the term the new normal. It's scary, it's frustrating. Like the idea that some people are accepting that, oh, the things just might not never be the same again. It's like, we're free creatures. We should have the right to decide that. Like, if you want to decide to basically live your life differently in the future, that's great. That's, you know, that's up to you, you know, but to restrict people from doing that. And as you know, you've done documentaries on government surveillance and other stuff. I mean, once they get this overreach, they never give it back, right?
I think that's been what's the most scary thing for me. I've actually had the conversation a couple times in the last few days with some friends, and just, you know, going back and forth like, well, this is going on, but yeah, there's the good things happening. And I guess the main thing that I'm seeing as far as this whole pushing of the new normal, I did a video called It's Time to Reject the New Normal, because I'm sure even if today, if you search this phrase, you're going to see dozens and dozens of mainstream outlets just pushing this phrase, like, this is what work's going to be like during the new normal. This is how travel's going to be like. This is how family and education, just so many things are going to change for better or worse. And I think that more than any other time in our history, what concerns me the most is that we are dealing with governments that have access to technologies that past tyrants and past rulers could have only dreamed of and had never had at their fingertips now. And you combine that with an event like COVID-19, which, much like other events, scares the people into accepting all kinds of things because they want to feel safe again. They want to feel free. They don't want to be afraid that the coronavirus is going to get them sick, or that terrorists are going to attack them, or whatever it may be. And so the governments are pretty easily able to step into that gap and say, okay, we'll keep you safe, but it's going to cost you this. It's going to take this. It's going to, you know, cost this much taxpayer money. We're going to need trillions of dollars. Now we're giving the government trillions of dollars. We're going to need trillions of your dollars. We're going to have to put, you know, the rest of the future generations under this tax burden. Oh, by the way, you might not be able to travel as often. You might have to carry this passport. You might have to have this certificate. There's all kinds of weird, crazy ideas that I think are, that maybe just 6 months ago, if you had said this, people would have been like, no, there's no way, they would never do that. But you throw this coronavirus, COVID-19 into the mix, and people are willing to accept things that they might not have previously. So I think that's what worries me the most as far as just this new normal, is that some of these steps, they don't really seem like they're things that are easy to just walk back. You know, it's like flipping that switch. Some of them might not just easily turn back off, at least maybe not immediately. And it could mean, if not the complete loss of, at least a very, 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 very obvious alteration to what we've come to know as freedom, you know, and that being accepted as the new normal.
Yeah, it's weird because in some cases, you're right. People are, in many cases, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of people who are willing to accept things like, I mean, wearing a mask everywhere. There was a clip of Dr. Fauci on 60 Minutes talking about, like, this was like a couple months ago, talking about in the No Agenda podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with their show, but they've been doing a great job covering this. And on their last episode, they had the clip of Dr. Fauci talking about how a mask isn't really going to do anything, and he doesn't see everybody wearing a mask because it's not, you know, it can cause other issues with people touching their face more because of the mask and all this other stuff. And it's like, that was just 2 months ago on 60 Minutes, and now everybody's wearing a mask. In Massachusetts, you know, a week or two ago, they were, something like that. They started requiring to wear a mask just about any public place. And I see people now going to the ridiculous extent of walking by themselves, nowhere to, you know, no one anywhere close to them, nowhere to be seen, and wearing masks. People driving by themselves wearing a mask. It's like so silly that I'm just like, you know, it's one, and in a way, I almost feel bad for them because I know a lot of it's like, you know, and even people in all alternative media, you know, you did that that great conversation with James Corbett talking about 5G and coronavirus and if there is a link and all the people kind of connecting dots that aren't really there or whatnot. I think because there's so much information and people don't know what to believe, people are so scared to like, fuck it, I'm just going to wear a mask anyways because I'm like, I'm not sure what to believe. So I think that's a big part of it. But, I mean, haven't you also seen a little bit of a lot of people who were either not interested in the vaccine conversation or never really question it. Now you're starting to see people kind of more open to the idea that you should question the vaccines.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, so I'm here in Mexico and things are a lot more calm in Mexico, I will say. But in the recent weeks or so, you've seen more masks start to pop up. And yeah, just this morning I went on a bike ride and I saw somebody driving in their car by themselves wearing a mask. And I'm just like, what? But it's become, and the other thing that I've noticed recently, of course, anything that humans have to do, well, we have to have our own style and our own flavor, right? So now lots of people are getting their custom personalized masks. It's going to become a trend of like, oh, look how cool mine is. And the, you know, I've got a Spider-Man on mine, or I've got, you know, polka dots or whatever, just different trendy things. There's going to be a Nike symbol, and it becomes a part of our attire, a part of the new normal, right? And people just very quickly can accept that, and can these things can become normalized, which is the scary part. But you're right also that there are people who are pushing back, and of course we see protests around the world really taking place. And yeah, I think that, you know, the interesting thing, I ran for mayor of Houston last year as a sort of a stunt to wake more people up out there and to talk about real issues like this. And one of the platforms, the 9 main issues that I ran on, was campaigning, basically saying that I would never, as mayor, I would never support any attempts to initiate mandatory vaccinations in the city of Houston. So I got a lot of support from the, you know, crowd that questions vaccines, or moms and parents that are kind of have their concerns. And that was awesome. But of course, some people who are sort of like, this is coming out of left field. What do you mean? Why would you even talk about that? There's no law attempting to do that. And it was just more saying like, no matter what happens, of course, I didn't have any idea coronavirus was about to happen. But no matter what happens, if I'm in that position, we'll never even consider the idea, just to make sure everybody feels safe. And from the mainstream candidates and the mainstream media in Houston, they kind of treated it as if it was a crazy idea. Or why, you know, why even bother saying that? And here we are less than a year later, and this idea is being floated front and center by Bill Gates and by others. And this idea that we can't go back to normal until people are vaccinated. I mean, literally the idea that someone is even floating the idea that the concept that you have to vaccinate the entire world before things can go back to normal is just mind blowing to me. I mean, it's not like, oh, I'm not surprised, but it's still just like, oh my God, we're at this point. We are at this point. They are now openly advocating we must vaccinate the entire world to, you know, go back to normal. And I think that move alone is waking people up, because we have this sort of paradoxical experience of the harder the state pushes, more people do wake up, right? But there's also still the masses that are indoctrinated and believe and worship the state and everything that the media says, and they fully believe in that. But at the same time, when they march forward, it does cause more minds to start questioning things and saying, wait, what? They're doing what? Okay. Maybe my friend that's always telling me all those crazy conspiracy theories might be onto something. Let me go back and talk to him and ask him some questions, right? And I think many of us have experienced that, where friends and family who maybe previously weren't interested, I can say for sure that, you know, for better or worse, right now is a great time for content creators, because people are at home, and people are not only at home, but they're just consuming things. They're looking for answers right now. There's so many people I've realized on the spiritual level, and just like you said, with 5G, COVID, and all the other theories, I had to do a whiteboard of them because there's so many of them, just trying to explain it to everybody, that it's overwhelming for people. People are just like, like you said, I don't know if it's real or not, but I'm going to wear a mask because I don't know what the hell to think, you know, or I'm going to stay away from people just in case, you know. And in the beginning, and I still am trying to be healthy, I'm taking vitamin C, high dose vitamin C every day. I'm like, I'm just eating good and doing my own thing. But not out of fear, just because that's what I think I should be doing to take care of myself, right? So again, back to the previous conversation we were having, maybe this is going to inspire people to think in a healthier way, because people are questioning things, people are pushing back, people are starting to, you know, wonder why the world is going this way, and maybe this is a catalyst that we need to rethink our lives.
Well, it's amazing the power of fear, and because, I mean, I've taken on my Instagram story, on my Facebook story, I'm constantly taking clips from the press conferences, from Dr. Fauci, from Dr. Birx, that contradict the mainstream narrative. I mean, just yesterday, Dr. Fauci, there's a little clip I put on my Instagram and Facebook story of him saying the overwhelming majority of people who get the virus will be okay. So it's like, if that statement is true, and the guy who is seeing all the research and has, you know, access to the European research and research all over the world, seeing all the science, and is having these discussions, says that's okay, why the fuck is the whole world locked down? Like, my thing is, like, what are people, like, where are they getting this information that, like, and that's the thing, the power of scaring people. I mean, after September 11th, it was a perfect example of how you could, it was only after something like September 11th that you could convince people to go into two countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, that had nothing to do with anything. Like, that were, that before, on September 10th, like, nobody cared about, nobody thought that it would be a good idea to invade. But after September 11th, it'd be complete, you know, people just were so emotional and they so wanted answers and wanted to do something that they weren't thinking logically. And I mean, and that's the thing about humans. Like, we have to understand, like, we don't, that's why spirituality, I think meditation, it is important to kind of figure out, like, okay, am I married to this idea, or am I making a emotional, having emotional reaction to this, and to kind of gather yourself and kind of find out the origin of your thoughts and your feelings on certain things. And, you know, I think that's, so you even see people now, you know, to the other extreme, they're like, I'll be the first one in line to get the vaccine. And I'm just like, you look at the SARS vaccine. Look at, like, they've never made a, first of all, RNA vaccine that works. I mean, they've never, you know, there's all this inconsistencies. The type of vaccine they're even trying to come up with, they've had very little to no success. So never mind the fact that they're going to fast track it and, you know, make it, you could try to get one out even sooner, which makes you question, you know, how much of the research did they really do? How good was the research? All this stuff. So even if you believe that, you know, vaccines are safe and it's a good thing, you have to question how quickly they're going to push this out. And are we all going to be guinea pigs? You know, Governor Baker in Massachusetts said that, you know, phase four will only happen after we have a treatment or vaccine. And it's just like, well, how about people just get healthy and then, you know, after the virus kind of tones down a little bit? I mean, it does. Something is there. I mean, obviously something is killing people. One conversation that Jason Burmis and James Corbett had not too long ago, which was a great conversation, was about the overall deaths by all causes. Like, that number seems to be hard to find. Like, okay, are more people dying now than ever? Or is it the same amount of people dying, but we're classifying them as coronavirus deaths? You know, like, how, you know, and that information, it is hard to find. I mean, you look at all the mainstream channels, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, like, they don't even have all the same numbers, and they're supposed to have access to all the best journalists and resources and all this stuff. So it's like, how do they expect, you know, us researchers like yourself or me to be able to find out what the hell is going on? You know, so what is your take on the virus in regards to how serious you think it is? And do you think it's, you know, has it been just overblown by the media?
Well, so I've done a series of interviews on a lot of these angles on the topic. Of course, as you mentioned, I talked with James Corbett and we dissected the 5G COVID-19 theory. I talked with Dr. Stephanie Seneff from MIT, and she discussed the possibility that glyphosate from Roundup is also causing playing a role in this. I talked with Dr. Andrew Kaufman about his theory that basically germ theory is totally wrong and that viruses don't exist. And there's a lot of people who've kind of gravitated towards that. I also talked with Dr. Richard Chang about high dose vitamin C and had the success that he's had treating not only COVID-19, but just people in general with intravenous high dose vitamin C. Coincidentally, that's the only video that YouTube chose to remove, the one about how to take care of yourself with vitamin C. I guess it's too dangerous for the public. So I've had time to sit here and dissect I've also done some research and some articles on the bioweapon theory and explored that whole theory. And honestly, I think that there's maybe a possibility to hold some of these beliefs at the same time, even though they seem to conflict. So let me see if I can put this together. I think that there is something. Now, I still don't know where I'm at on the whole virus versus terrain theory. I think that something's making people sick, and it probably is a combination of things. Perhaps there is something floating out there. I do believe that whether we call them viruses, germs, whatever names you want to get them, or just weaponized exosomes, if people want, that the military, we know for a fact, studies bio weapons and engineering viruses and different. This is a part of their warfare, basically. It's bio warfare. And we've known this since 9/11, since before 9/11, you know, with anthrax and others. So when people tell me that viruses don't exist, I kind of have trouble, like, accepting that. But maybe they just we should give it a different name. I don't know. But the point is, we know the military has invested millions and millions of dollars into researching these things. We know the facts that we do about Fauci and his connections to the Wuhan Virology Institute out there, the U.S. government helping fund those projects with the Chinese government. We've got all those facts, right? So I believe it's that theory is most likely, that I don't think that it is 5G causing COVID-19, that they are one and the same. I think that there's a virus that is out there. It seems to spread faster than most viruses, but also it seems like it doesn't harm people who are generally healthy. You know, if you're older, if you're sick, if you have pre-existing conditions, and let's face it, a lot of Americans are fat and obese and diabetes and sick. And I mean, not just America, but definitely in America. And I would even say parts of Mexico, there's a diabetes problem, and people of those conditions might be more prone to getting sick quicker. Then you throw in combinations of glyphosate exposure from all the Roundup being sprayed all over the U.S. Now, some countries aren't dealing with that, right? Because they have Roundup banned, but in the U.S. could be playing a major role. Then you throw on exposure to radio frequency radiation from 5G and other devices, which we do know can harm the immune system and can disrupt cell repair. So you put all that together with the potential of a bioweapon. Now, some folks would say, if it's a bioweapon, how come people aren't dying by the millions? Well, maybe that wasn't the goal. Think about who it is killing: old, young, weak. Maybe those are the part of the, you know, in the eugenicist mind, those might be the people they think need to go, right? So they've created a virus that spreads very fast, and it'll make some people sick, and maybe it might cause, from some studies, long-term scarring. There's even a few studies that have looked at the potential for sterilizing men. I mean, maybe that was another byproduct of this, right? So I don't think we can rule out the bioweapon theory. To me, it still seems to be the most solid. I don't think this is just a natural thing. The wet market, the bats and all that kind of thing doesn't seem to hold up. But I do think 5G could be playing a role. We know 5G weakens immune systems, but I don't think there were so many people in the beginning were like, look, Wuhan installed all these antennas and this is where it started. Well, now we're not even sure it started in Wuhan. There's more research coming out showing that different countries had it back in the fall. And even I saw one report saying that some researchers believe they might have had it last summer. So we still don't know the origin of this. So, I mean, and that also could put a hole in the theory of it came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology if it didn't actually start there. My point is, we don't know. We don't know those facts. But in the beginning, people were pointing to, look at the antennas in Wuhan and how it spread there. Well, if you've watched my documentary, you know that I've been fighting 5G in Houston since October 2018. We've had 5G installed there, maybe not as quick and to the extent that they had in Wuhan, but there are other parts of the world that have 5G that aren't hit as hard. There are people that, you know, don't have 5G and they're sick, you know, or there's something going on. So there's just a lot of theories to go over there, but I think that overall it does seem to be some form of bioweapon, whether it's the U.S. or the Chinese or them working together. It could have been designed to take out the weak, the infirm, the ill, the young, and that is who it seems to be affecting the most. But I also do think that, yeah, there's definitely some things we need to challenge and question about the scientific establishment. I think most of us would understand that. That might be germ theory. You know, it seems common sense to me that if that terrain theory and the idea that your body and how healthy you keep your body and what you put in your body and all these things that many of us have learned after unlearning the mainstream, you recognize that that makes sense. What you put in your body is going to affect how you feel, what your body looks like, how your body responds to these stimuli. So I don't know. I think that there's some questions that need to be asked in there, but I just recommend anybody who is interested in kind of diving deeper in those topics I just briefly went over to check out those series of interviews I did. Like I said, it's Dr. Stephanie Siniff on glyphosate, Dr. Andrew Kaufman on the germ theory, Richard Chang on vitamin C, and then I have a few articles on the whole bioweapon theory as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about YouTube and Facebook and all the social media websites is that, I mean, look at what they're censoring. They're censoring protests. They're censoring, I mean, the CEO of YouTube was talking about how anybody who talks about vitamin C is going to be pulled or whatnot. I mean, really, out of all the things that are on YouTube, I mean, you have violence, you have so many things. It's like, that's what's dangerous. Like, vitamins, if anybody knows anything about vitamins, it's almost impossible to overdose on it. I mean, if you take too much of it, you might get diarrhea, maybe. I mean, it's the fact that, and we all know that the experts have been saying, if you have a weak immune system, compromised immune system, you're at risk. We know vitamin C has some immune system benefits. So why is that dangerous to tell people, hey, this thing is dangerous for people with weak immune systems. This other thing, you know, which you can get from food, and if you're getting it from a vitamin, you're just trying to get more of it instead of eating a bunch of food with it. that's dangerous. So it's like people have to question. You know, when the Plandemic documentary was going around and it was going viral, a lot of people were like, oh, it's being censored because it's false information. It's this and that. I mean, you go on Wikipedia, the first line about Dr. Judy is that she's an anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist. But if you watch the documentary, she says in the documentary, I'm not anti-vax. So it's like where people aren't even being open-minded to these other perspectives and ideas. And like you said, it's like even in regards to germ theory, you don't seem to jump on either side, but you're open to the idea. And I think a lot of people think they're open-minded or to new ideas, but the second you give them something that would go against their, I guess, their whatever they already believe, they push back immediately instead of actually being open to these different perspectives.
Yeah, you're right about that. And it's important for us to remain open-minded. I've, in recent months and years, like I said, the longer I do this, the more I realize, the less I know. I'm like, yeah. Wow, I'm never going to figure it out. I've come to the place, man, of having years doing rabid research, like, okay, there's a bottom to this rabbit hole. I'm going to figure it out. I got the key. Here it is. I just share this with everybody. And then you get to a point where like, okay, I don't know if I'll ever figure this out. I have to accept that. I have to accept that there's a very real possibility that I might die and never have everything explained to me, all the things that I want to understand. And I'm okay with that. I've had to, you know, I think some people, that really freaks them out to accept that. And as you said, with wanting to, well, we've got this opinion, which is supported by these experts. And well, they've got this opinion supported by their experts. And you got to pick one or the other. And often truth is not black and white. I mean, most of the time truth is not black and white. Many times there's shades of truth mixed in there. And that's why it's easy for the mainstream to lie to the people, because they can give them a little bit of truth, but then sort of push them in this direction or don't look over here. And people feel confident that they have, okay, well, those are facts. I know those are real. Well, I'm assuming the rest of this must be real as well. And these other people, like you said, they're just anti-vaxxer, crazy conspiracy theorists. And it's unfortunate. 2 points I want to say about what you just mentioned about that documentary. One thing that I think is important to say, and this isn't specific to the Plandemic documentary, but just in general, because of the censorship going on, there's this weird kind of flip reaction to it where people who I would say don't put out very good content, when they get banned or censored, to them that's like, oh, well, see, I was censored. That means it's real, right? Or people will say that documentary wouldn't have been taken down if it wasn't real. And I don't think that's strong logic. Like, obviously, just because, like, people will say, oh, where'd you learn that? YouTube? As if you can't learn anything factual on YouTube, right? Or the internet. Like, it's a way to sort of demean what you're doing. But of course, not everything on YouTube is real, but that doesn't mean that everything is fake either, you know? So there's just this kind of, people pick one extreme or the other. So if you're being censored, well, then it must be real. Oh, if you're being censored, well, it's because it's fake. You know, I just think we got to be careful about falling into those different traps. They're just different dichotomies that they keep putting in front of us. Okay, you're either this or you're this, right? And the other thing, man, that I've noticed with having conversations with friends about this, and people who aren't really activists out there in the streets every day, but they're people who have opinions, and every now and then they decide to post one of them on Facebook, and then they're like, oh my God, what did I do? I actually asked some questions about why we're being locked down, and all of my friends attacked me. And there's a good friend of mine who I've seen this happen to him several times in the last few weeks. He keeps trying to just, like, he's not antagonizing anybody, saying like, you guys are all sheep or anything. He's just saying, like what you brought up about Fauci earlier, or about, you know, I put it in one of my articles that the World Health Organization themselves doesn't recommend contact tracing for anything. Yet here we are, right? Just pointing out these inconvenient facts and getting just attacked by the mob of like, how dare you question, like, just stay inside. It's for the good of everybody. You know, and I tried to tell him, like, look, you're trying hard and you're making a valiant effort. And there is a point, I think, in engaging with the public. Otherwise, I wouldn't do what I do. But I also have realized, and especially more recently, that it's just not healthy and probably not helpful to spend so much of our time trying to convince these people. You know, some of them aren't I just don't think they're going to be able to get it. I think, unfortunately, we are moving into a world where our society is fracturing. I mean, they've talked about the post-truth era for a couple of years now. The Bilderberg Group and other people have been putting that idea, we're in the post-truth era. And they try to say it's because of Trump, but it's much bigger than that, though. We're getting to a point where, again, these people have their experts, we have our experts, they've got their talking heads, we've got our, you know, and you can sit there and provide studies. Well, my study says this, well, my study says this, you know, and just go back and forth. And maybe somebody might switch sides, but for the most part, I think people are really locking themselves down, their positions. And it's unfortunate because if we're not willing to learn, if we're not willing to come into a conversation with an open mind, with an open heart, we are not going to grow as a species and as individuals. And in fact, we probably will just get more rooted in our own biases and our own assumptions and assumptions about each other. And that could only lead to more conflict and to more division. I really hope and pray that it doesn't go that way. But I do think that that's what the powers that wish they were are hoping for, is to just continue to foment and create more division and focus on divisive topics and getting people just arguing neighbor versus neighbor, as opposed to saying, hey, this is a time when we need to be coming together more than ever. And maybe we should look at what the people up top are doing instead of just fighting each other all the time.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you are seeing a lot of that where it's, you post something and you're almost afraid of speaking out or like you said, sharing any article because you're being attacked. But I think the alternative is worse. Like my wife is very much somebody who like hates confrontation. So she keeps her opinions to herself. But I'm like, I tell her all the time, I'm like, the reason why I'm outspoken is because, and I'm not rude about it, but I'll share articles that I find interesting, videos that I find interesting, hoping that maybe even if just one person is intrigued enough to click on it and maybe expand their thinking or look at things from a different perspective, it's worth doing. But you do see people attack you. But I'm like, how many times have I said something that maybe was a little controversial or talked about something that somebody could easily say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, or label me as something. And then next thing you know, the opposite happens. People are like, holy shit, I think I'm thinking the same way. Or, oh, yeah, I read something about that, too. That's interesting. So it's like, I think a lot of times people who have the same thoughts and they're curious about the same topics, sometimes are afraid to speak out because of that attacking of the mob. And then when you do speak out, and somebody who has the courage to kind of, put their heart on their sleeve and tell people how they feel, then they're like, oh, crap, this is good, because I'm not the only one who feels this way. I'm not a crazy person. I'm not this is a logical person, a logical sounding person who is also having the same doubts or going down the same rabbit hole. So it is a hard kind of internal decision to make, because sometimes you do end up wasting a lot of time arguing with people who are like, well, you can find anything on YouTube. Anybody can make a YouTube video, or anything can be on the internet. And it's like, well, where are you getting your information then? Because just about anything that you find is also available online. So even if you gave me a peer-reviewed study, guess what? I could find that peer-reviewed study online. So is it not true when it's online, but it is true when it's in your hands? Like, it's such a ridiculous argument. But like you said, it's a way of kind of just, not actually discussing the points. And that's the thing that's the most frustrating with people. It's like, I am more than happy to have a discussion about things and be like, okay, I don't agree with Dr. Judy, or I don't agree with this guy on every point, but let's talk about this one point that I think she's making a valid point, or the one point of the documentary that I think we should pay more attention to. And you don't have to agree with every piece of the article or every piece of everybody's research. I mean, that's okay, but it doesn't mean that if you disagree on one thing, like all these videos that came out, like a media debunking the documentary, it's like, there might be something in there that is inaccurate or could be argued, but it doesn't mean everything is wrong. It doesn't mean, you could literally find debunking just about everything. I mean, there's nothing that hasn't had a debunking article or video. So I think people who are looking to debunk it or subscribe to everything that's in the documentary, I think you do have to kind of look in the mirror and be like, okay, let me look at each point, individually, and then discuss that. But so many people aren't willing to do that. I mean, I've gone in discussions with people where it's just like they're completely not willing to look at something because of the source. And to me, it's like, you know what? Like, I don't like Fox News, MSNBC, or CNN. But if even CNN, who I especially since Trump's been in office, I seem to hate more than the other two. If they have a article that's worth sharing, that's interesting, I'm not going to not share it just because it comes from CNN, So I think a lot of times people are already deciding if it's factual or if it's a valid point just based on who wrote it or where it's coming from, instead of actually looking at the points.
Yeah, and that's a good point to make, man, because like I said, with the whole just because it's censored doesn't mean it's real, just because it's coming from mainstream doesn't mean it's fake. And I'm sure you've seen that same thing. You can share an article that's just like, hey, the sky is blue, and it's from CNN.com. People are like, fake news, CNN's fake, And it's, again, that's this dangerous dichotomous thinking, because then the other side of that is, oh, if I got it from my alternative media channels, then it must be true. I don't even have to fact check it because I know that they're true and mainstream's fake. And I don't know, we just have to be careful if we're, for me, this whole journey, as I said earlier, it started from like starting to heal my trauma. And then once I started to work on that, it started with wanting to understand more of the world. And then once I started to understand more of the world and see some of the truths and realize how much we're being lied to, it was very much like driven by a desire to help people, to find more people. You know, we had the group that I started was called the Houston Freethinkers, and our little tagline was just find us. And we would just put this up around the city, just trying to look for other people who knew what was up and who were thinking differently and wanted to organize. And, you know, to your point and kind of what I was saying, sharing about my friend sharing and getting attacked, I hope that anybody hearing this can really think that, you know, it's important to be outspoken when you feel comfortable. Of course, a lot of us don't like confrontation. I don't like confrontation, really. I've learned just like over the years, you just kind of get over it, because like if you care enough about something, you just, like you said, you got to just put it out there sometimes. Like, hey, I find this interesting. I find this intriguing. I find this very scary. Whatever, read this, share it. That's what social media is supposed to be about, sharing our ideas and our passions and our interests and things of that sort. But it seems like we have got to a point where people are so afraid to just be honest and to share what they really feel, what they really think, because of the fear of the mob. And so, you know, when you were saying that, it kind of, a thought popped in my head that I'm going to make sure to share with my friend, is just, you know, to remind him that you're not doing this for the mob. You're not doing it for them. You're doing it for the people who don't know that there are other people out there like them. There are a lot of people who feel very much alone. You know, whenever I started hosting meetings in Houston, I think we started the summer of 2011 all the way up till about 2018. Every single month that we hosted meetings, I had somebody come to those meetings and say, I feel alone. I can't talk to my friends, my family, my girlfriend, my boyfriend thinks I'm crazy, and they are coming to a meeting in downtown Houston to connect with other activists and like-minded people because they feel so alone, because they're just like, I need to be around people who know what the hell is going on. I need to talk about solutions. I need to take action. So there are so many of us who feel that way. And I guarantee right now there are a lot of people who feel that way, because when big events like this happens, it becomes unpopular or almost illegal, or now in the case of social media, you get banned to question these narratives. And so other people out there are like, well, I don't want to get banned. I don't want to be labeled a conspiracy theorist. I don't want to be called an anti-vaxxer, or I don't want to, you know, get attacked just for having a different opinion. So I'll just shut up and keep it to myself. And some people don't even share their own opinions with their spouse or their families or their, you know, closest ones because of that. And that's a very dangerous world. If we are starting to self-censor, I've talked about this recently in the independent media, if we're starting to self-censor because of these fact checkers, and if we're starting to self-censor just as individuals, I mean, that can get to a very dangerous place if we're not open, we're not communicating, we're not letting each other know where we stand and having that open dialogue, because that's what this should really be about. But of course, we're not living in a society run by people who want there to be open dialogue and open conversation.
Yeah, the thing is, it's almost like if you share something that has, you know, like on Facebook, what they've been doing, they've been kind of like blurring the article or video and then saying, this isn't factual, do you want to continue or whatever. When you share something like that, you almost feel like embarrassed, like, oh, people are going to think I'm sharing fake information or conspiracy theories. And then, like you said, it almost causes people to self-censor, because it's like, oh, if I share this, now I look like a conspiracy theorist because Facebook's saying that I'm sharing false information. And, you know, you'll hesitate. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I completely understand people who don't want to be outspoken. I get it. Like, I'm the same way. Even though I get myself in a lot of confrontation sometimes, I definitely don't enjoy it. Like, I like to like end things as civil as possible if I can. But my dislike for confrontation, that emotion isn't as strong as my willingness and desire to have to say something if I truly believe in it. And a lot of times I think it's helpful information. It's no different than, like, you know, I'm big into like the ketogenic diet or whatever. Like, the one thing about in the diet world is people always talk about how, like, oh, it's very religious. People get obsessed with their religion, you know, this tribal thinking where it's like, oh, I'm the paleo guy. I'm all about paleo. Save your life. It's the best diet. Or I'm the keto guy, or I'm the carnivore diet guy. And I think sometimes it is tribal, but sometimes it's also because I think it can help people. You know, if I see somebody who has addiction to sugar, if I see somebody who you know, can't lose weight and or having joint pain, you know, arthritis. And if I think this diet can help with inflammation, it can help with some pain. Like, the reason why I'm so excited to kind of talk to people about it is because I think I can give information that can help. And I think that's the thing. Like, when I'm discussing, you know, something controversial like vaccines, and just kind of discussing the other perspective of it, like, yeah, it can harm people. There has been, there has been vaccines that have harmed people. They've given out billions of dollars in the vaccine courts to injured people. Like, it's not that I want to push that upon anybody. I think people need all the information to make a decision. And if you decide to make the same decision regardless, that's fine. But I don't think it's fair when people only get one side of the story and then they can only base their decision on that. And the other side of the story is considered a conspiracy theorist. And I'm like you. I mean, I'm constantly searching to try to figure out my ideas and theories and doing the podcast and having so many discussions with people like yourself. Like, I constantly feel like it's a journey. You know, it's a journey that helps me find myself during these discussions. Like, I feel like I, you know, it's not just for the listeners to learn something, but I'm constantly learning something and kind of figuring out my thoughts and ideas. So, and I feel like, you know, this is kind of a quick metaphor that I've said on the podcast before. I feel like life's a giant, you know, a million piece puzzle, right? And every single piece of information you gather is one more piece of that puzzle. And I know by the end of my journey, I'm not going to have all the puzzle pieces together, and the image isn't going to be completely clear, but I'm just trying to gather as many as possible to get a clearer idea of what the image is. So that's kind of my little metaphor on life a little bit. But before, I know your time is limited. Before I let you go, I did want to get into, there's a lot of people like myself before watching your documentary, wasn't even sure what the hell 5G was or whatnot, and it's a term that goes around a lot. Could you give us like a brief explanation on what it is and issues that we might have with it?
Yeah, sure, brother. I appreciate that. Yeah, and I also like your metaphor there, man. Like I was saying earlier, I think there's some contentment to realize that, you know, there's the big puzzle and we might not end up with all the pieces. But as we learn, you know, we can share our journey with other people. That's kind of how I've always seen my work as well. As to 5G, so 5G, the simple definition, and then we'll get into the technical definition. The simple definition is the fifth generation of cellular technology, which is what the G's stand for. So going back to 1979, when the first phones were rolled out, that's 1G or the first generation. And then about every 10 years or so, a next generation rolled out, leading up to 2009, 2008, 2009 with smartphones and 4G, LTE. Those are what we've been using for the last decade or so. And now in 2018, going to the 2020s, we're seeing the installation of small cell sites and new infrastructure for what they're calling the fifth generation of cellular technology. So the difference between each of those generations is the frequency. Whenever they change, so for example, on the electromagnetic spectrum, on one side you have gamma rays, sun, and X-rays and all that, and you come over to the other side where you have radio waves and microwaves, and so you've got things like cell phones and Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. So that is the range within that area. I can't remember the specific hertz. We're going up to gigahertz now with 5G, but in that, if you just imagine that part of the frequency, you've got 1G, 2G, 3G. So as they open up a new generation, they open up more frequency bands. It has higher data rates. And with 5G, we are being told that this is going to be the fastest we've ever had, that it's going to be extremely low latency, which means that you can download movies 100 times faster, 4K downloads, virtual reality, augmented reality, driverless cars, robot assistants, all these kind of things that are being promised. It is also a part of what is known as the Internet of Things. And so the Internet of Things is what we're moving into now. This is the futuristic world that some people have been waiting for, where it's not just your smartphone and your laptop that are connected, but your smart fridge, your smart house, the driverless vehicle, sensors in the street to detect traffic, smart street lights, you know, all these different things connected in a web is what they're calling the Internet of Things. It'll lead to millions of new data points, millions of new sensors and microphones pretty much surrounding us for various reasons, like feeding you advertisements or video games or augmented reality that you can kind of have a pop-up display. You know, there's going to be a lot of different uses, but also there are very realistic concerns about privacy, about health, a loss of local power. And as I cover my documentary, and I just released a new investigation for Mint Press News about this, looking into the people behind the global race to 5G. And it's basically the telecom companies that have been running the industry since the 80s and who have infiltrated and worked with the government to push the cell phone cellular technology and now 5G forward, despite decades worth of studies that have showed harms. Now, most people would hear that and say, what do you mean? I've been using a cell phone since I was a kid, or, you know, we had phones right at birth for some people, and aren't aware that there are a number of studies that talk about this when in fact there are. And as my investigation, my documentary talk about, the industry known as big wireless, the telecom companies around the world have infiltrated the government and suppressed this information. So 5G is the fifth generation of cellular technology. It's also a new part of the spectrum, which I believe is from 20 gigahertz to up to 300 gigahertz. I could be wrong about that, but it's in the gigahertz range. And, you know, the big change, though, is that in order for it to operate correctly, it's going to be using millimeter waves, excuse me, which are notorious for easily being blocked and traveling short distances. So in order for us to have this low latency, this driverless cars, all this kind of future, we're going to have to, or the industry and the government are going to have to install hundreds of thousands of new cell sites and what they call small cells, which are just these small, some of them look like cylinder antennas on the top of light poles. Some of them are look like small backpacks that they put on existing infrastructure. But they're going to have to install these every 100 to 200 feet in order for it to operate efficiently and the way that they are promising. So as you can imagine, this is causing much concern in many people, because this is going to be an exponential increase in exposure to radio frequency radiation that humanity has never experienced before. The amount of cell towers and cell sites and small cells that are going to be installed and that have already started to be installed in the next decade or so will outpace what we've seen in the previous 20, 30 years, and just within the next 5 years. So the industry is pushing for it. You know, they're selling it as the next best thing. In my documentary, we look at the health, we look at their surveillance, we look at the corruption between the FCC and big wireless. We look at some of the environmental problems. I interview various experts in those fields. And I also kind of show clips of how I've been fighting and trying to expose it in Houston and confronting the mayor and confronting the FCC commissioners. And I mean, it's just a big ball of mess, unfortunately, because like other areas of government, there's lots of corruption.
Yeah. So in from your research, obviously, you haven't seen any real link between the coronavirus or 5G. I mean, obviously, if something's not good for your health, and if there's a virus going around killing people, I mean, I can understand the logic of it might make it worse, right? Oh, sorry. Bad timing.
No, you're cool. Yeah. You know, so I haven't seen any hard evidence of that. And I will say there's been a lot of focus on this 60 gigahertz, which is a part of the range that 5G operates in. And I've done a number of videos that if anybody wants to explore that, who have heard that or believe that, you can check out my research on that. Now, I haven't heard any, like the frequencies themselves, the range that they're using for 5G are already concerning, because we have U.S. government studies themselves from just 2016 and 2018 showing that 2G and 3G were already causing an increase in tumors in the brain and tumors in the heart with rats who were exposed to 2G and 3G. And that's technology that we've been using for decades already, right? That's not even getting into 4G of the last decade. So, and what it's important for people to remember as well is that 5G is just going to be laid on top of. It's not like they're going back to take down the 4G towers or take down the 3G towers. Like, this is all going to be layered on top of everything else. So you're going to wake up in the morning, some people sleep with their phones, so they're going to wake up immediately being exposed to it. Well, they've probably been being exposed to it all night. Plus the Wi-Fi, most people don't unplug that at night, which is one of the easiest steps you can do. And so they're being exposed to it all night where they're sleeping. So their cells aren't able to repair. Their body isn't able to produce melatonin, so you can get good dreams and sleep regulation, as well as just general health. Then they're being exposed to it immediately as they step up. Then, you know, they carry the phone in their pocket all day. Then they're staring at the laptop screen all day. And then they step outside, and there's Wi-Fi routers and smart meters and 5G towers. I mean, just think about this. It's what some people call an electro smog or a digital smog, a digital soup. And it's just humans are going to have to question the way that we interact with technology, not only because of the surveillance and privacy stuff we were talking about earlier, but because of the radio frequency radiation exposure. I mean, we have to do some serious rethinking of how we're living our lives, and children are at risk of this more than anybody. I mean, that's the craziest thing, is kids are immediately being handed cell phones. Women are using cell phones or resting tablets on their bellies while they're pregnant. I mean, there's a lot of really just And it's not, we've been lied to. I mean, I'm not trying to attack anybody. I'm empathizing with us as a species. We've been lied to. We've been conditioned to believe these things are safe. People want to profit. They want to lie. They want to harm. But yeah, there's not much strong evidence I would see that 5G and coronavirus are linked together. But as you said, if you're sick already, if you don't have a good diet, if you're using these various things, then you shouldn't expect a positive result. You know, you shouldn't expect to fare very well during an epidemic.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Derek, for being with me. I really appreciate your time. It was an awesome conversation. I think you have an amazing story, so I'm glad I could share that with the listeners. Where can people get your documentaries, your information, if they want to connect with you, and so forth?
So the website is theconsciousresistance.com, and if you go to the Conscious Resistance website, you'll see a tab for my books. All my books are available to download for free. The documentaries, you can watch them for free as well, and if you want to download a copy, you can do that as well. And then if you just want more background about me and my work, derekbrose.com is my other website.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thanks, Derek. Hey, enjoy the rest of the day, and hopefully we'll reconnect again soon in the near future.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for having me on, man.
Hey, thanks, Derek. Take care.
I believe in the ripple effect.